So, OsmoCom Testing Initiative, yeah. I don't know, I randomly came up with that name. I wanted to talk about the progress we have been making in terms of testing the OsmoCom stack during the past 1.5 years or so. And that's sort of a wrap-up of that. So if you've seen my presentation at Osmo DevCon, it will be a big repeat of that. But then how many people in here have seen my presentation at Osmo DevCon about testing? Yeah, OK. So it does make sense. It does make sense. Two-thirds have not. So. Yeah, so we have the split NITB, or how since yesterday's educational session we now know it's called the disaggregated NITB aftermath. It was the biggest architectural change that we had seen in the, well, what the thing formerly known as OpenBSC happened. And it had lots of good reasons, and I think the code is much better and much cleaner now. We have proper finite state machines, we have proper timeouts, we have a proper A over IP interface, we have no dependency on synchronous database access, we have a shared database between MSC and SGSN, we have all the different 2G, 3G authentication and back and forward cases. So lots of good things have come of it, but also, well, some bad parts. And that means we had lots of breakage as a result. I think whenever you change something in such a fundamental way, there will be things that are broken. And we had regressions of things that used to do or used to work before. And we also had some things that were known omissions during the restructuring. But like it is with some things that are known to some people, they're not known to everyone. And they tend to be forgotten. So it's a formerly known omissions. Until somebody hits that again. So we also have some commercial users that are stuck with SCCP Lite, and at least until very recently with Osmo SPC SCCP Lite. Backports so that are time consuming, and so we wanted to get beyond that very quickly. So it's still used these days in production, but we are with Osmo VSC at a point where we should do trials and move over those legacy deployments at this point. So yeah, what did we learn? The overall complexity is getting quite high now in the OsmoCom stack. Of course, if you implement everything as a proof of concept hack and you put everything in one program, it's rather easy. You take all the shortcuts that exist, or even those that don't. As long as the functionality is rather limited, you have like one BTS model, the BS11, and you have one use case that is to make a voice call after a location update in that one BTS, then it's all rather simple. But then if you factor in different BTS models and handover and discontinuous transmission and all kinds of other nastiness, then suddenly the amount of different things that could work together or not explode. And so now we have the split architecture, which actually also allows for better testing. Because if you have everything in one blob, then it's rather difficult to test. You can basically only test end-to-end. If you have one blob that does a voice that does everything up to the voice call, then yeah, you can do an end-to-end voice call test, but that's it, and you cannot really test at lower parts. So yeah, the main focus during the past months has been testing, and some more testing, and finally, even more testing. And more of that. So what are we testing, and at which level? So we do have the unit tests, which we always had, even in the before the split, maybe not as many, but also the code base has been growing. So I don't think the unit test coverage has been extended. Those unit tests are tests for individual functions in the code, and they get executed when you do the make check step during the compilation of the program, And we execute that automatically before every patch can get merged in Garrett. So we execute that even in different configurations or with different compile flags. So we're basically rather sure these days if we merge a patch that the unit tests pass, otherwise it wouldn't even be possible to merge it. However, the unit test coverage is not really all that great. And that hasn't really changed so much. There's some improvement, but as I said, also the code base is much bigger. What we do have, though, is now automatized functional tests in TTC and 3. Those are not unit tests, but they are functional tests, and we call them integration tests. And what those tests do is you take one of the OsmoCom elements, like Osmo BTS or Osmo BSC or Osmo MSC or whatever, and you emulate everything around it in your test fixture. So you create a test. Let's say you want to test the BSC. Then your tester emulates the BTS behavior. It emulates the MSC behavior because those two parts are next to the BSC. It also attaches to the control interface, to the VTY interface, basically to any externally accessible interface. And then it runs a series of test cases. And those tests today are executed nightly by Jenkins jobs. We could run them more frequently. We think it's fine for now. It's mostly a question also of how to interpret the results. If the test runs once every night and you look at the Jenkins test results analyzer, then you can see a clear trend. If it can run once per day or 50 times per day, depending on your commit frequency, then the visualization tools of Jenkins are not so nice. So actually running them once per day or per night is rather good to see some trends in the results. The other tests that we have is Osmo GSM Tester, which I'm not going to cover in detail. I'm not even able to do so. We have other experts here, but it's our end-to-end test system where, contrary to the unit tests where we test individual functions and the integration tests where we test individual network elements, with Osmo GSM Tester, we test the entire network. So we start the BTS, the BSC, the MSC, the HLR, the PCU, the SGSN, the GGSN, the STP, the media gateway, and so on and so on. And then we have actual real BTS hardware, different variety of that, and real mobile station hardware, also different variety of that, all connected over coaxial cables, which then automatically execute interop tests multiple times per day. So I think the tests basically continuously get executed, at least if there's new commits in any of the repositories, right? Or does it get continuous?
Continuously every 4 hours, more or less, because it takes around 4 hours.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So just mentioned it runs continuously, and the test run takes about 4 hours because of all the slowness in, you know, waiting for the network to be scanned, waiting for the phone to register to the network, waiting for this, waiting for that. So it's not something that you can do rather fast, like a unit test or even the integration tests. We also do some interoperability tests. That's mainly against an NG40 RAN and core network simulator. That we have from NG4T. Well, the percent sign is another one of my famous typos. It's a company called NG4T. They have proprietary simulators for basically all 2G, 3G, 4G network elements. We do have some automatic execution, but it's relatively limited. We also do some manual testing against that. And basically, it helps us to test against an implementation that we didn't write ourselves, so that our own possibly distorted view of how the spec is supposed to be read doesn't affect us, because we don't test against our own implementation but against a third party implementation. So let's look a bit at the test suites that we are executing on the integration test side. They are developed in a language called TTCN3. They've been developed last year and this year, and we use an Eclipse project called Titan as a compiler. Don't be afraid by Eclipse, or frightened. You do not have to use any GUI. You do not have to use Java. It is the Eclipse Titan compiler is a C++ program itself, and it is used from makefiles on the command line. We run this in a containerized setup in Docker, and that gets executed by the Jenkins continuous integration setup. So basically, Jenkins determines right now based on schedule, now it's time to run this test again. And then it will start a script which will run, start up all the different Docker containers. One of the containers runs the tester and the other containers run the implementation under test and maybe some helpers. And they all connect to each other. And in the end, we also capture the PCAP files, the log output of all the different OsmoCom components. We capture, of course, the log, well, quite extensive log output of the TDCN3 tester itself. There is some terminology that you might encounter if you look at this stuff. There is an abstract test suite, a main test component, a parallel test component, and an implementation under test. This is just for reference purposes. The philosophy, as I mentioned, is we want to test one of the network elements, our IUT, the implementation under test. You may have heard of a DUT before, the device under test, but in our case, it's the software part. It's not really a device. And we test the externally visible behavior as seen on the external interfaces. So we do not test internal aspects of that network element. We test external. And that helps us to verify that our behavior is like the respective specs for the respective protocol prescribe. And we emulate whatever is needed for that particular component in TDCN3. Which means we do not reuse our own C code protocol implementations in the tests, which also helps in testing. Because let's say we implement the BSS map in LibOsmoCore or in OsmoBSC, and then if you write a test case using the same code and you have an NDNS bug, you will never trigger a failure because you use the same code on both sides and it will never show up. So the nice thing about Eclipse Titan is it's a project that was developed at Ericsson, and they have released the protocol encoders and decoders for most of the telecom protocols along with it. So we're basically using an implementation of BSS map or whatever protocol, almost all of them, that was written by Ericsson and that they use themselves for testing their network elements, so we can be rather certain that, at least more certain than if we just use our implementation, that that one has the correct implementation or the correct interpretation of the fields in the respective protocols and so on. So what do we test? Of course, successful cases. So a successful location update, a successful channel activation, a successful whatever, mobile originated SMS. Of course, even more interesting erroneous cases, particularly those that in a radio network, we always have all kinds of erroneous cases that are actually normal. So the phone has just lost reception or, you know, has crashed or whatever. From a protocol point of view, the transaction is has an error, but actually it's normal behavior in the network. We can do load resource exhaustion tests, like allocating all the channels on a BTS. So if you have a BTS and it has whatever half rate channels on seven time slots, then you have 14 half rate channels. So you can just from your test case basically keep allocating channels until you hit 14, and then you can test whether or not it refuses further allocations as it's supposed to do, and so on. You can also do tests on actual spec compliance. So if the spec says, for example, well, in case there is a message that has information elements out of order, it should be rejected, and then we can just implement that and see if it gets rejected as expected. The focus is on functionality that's relevant to this particular implementation under test. So we don't try to test other things that are out of scope for that particular part. TDCN3 was specifically designed for telecom protocol testing, and as I mentioned, the Titan team from Ericsson has released many telecom and other protocols in source code, in TDCN3 source code. That includes the entire mobile layer 3 for 2G to 4G, all the SMS stuff, the M3UA, SIGTRAN, SCCP, GTP for GPRS, and SPSSGP, you name it. SGSAP, for example, the protocol used for circuit switched fallback. Ericsson has released the TDCN3 encoder and decoder. That doesn't mean they have released any test cases. It just means we have the implementation of this protocol encode and decode function that we can use in order to write our own test cases based on that. So the test suites that we have for the individual elements were basically for almost all of them. I'm not going to read this list to you now. The test suites have varying degrees of completeness or coverage, but I'm rather happy with most of them in terms of the coverage. We do not have functional or executed test suites yet for the PCU, for the BSCNet, and for the GB proxy. The last two components are rather specific to some special use cases, but the PCU, of course, is a big relevant part to any network that operates packet service, and that's sort of a pity that so far we haven't been able to create a real test suite for it. The reason for that is rather simple, because if you want to test, the PCU basically sits between the radio interface and the SGSN on the packet switch side. And if you want to attach to those two interfaces, well, okay, on the SGSN side, you have a GB interface, you attach to that, we have the existing Ericsson NS and BSSAP encoder decoder modules, all nice and fine. But what do we do on the mobile station side? We need something that emulates the mobile phone behavior on the RLC and MAC layer over UM. That's basically the layer 2 of GPRS. And that's nothing we have ever implemented for OsmoCom BB. OsmoCom BB is circuit switched only. And that's nothing where you can find any component in open source, nor can you, we have tried and looked very hard, nor can you find anyone even to license a proprietary implementation of just the RLC MAC code on the UE side. You can find people that license your complete UE, but that you don't want that. We want low-level test cases only on the RLC MAC layer. We don't want to test the entire stack across all layers. That's not what you want in such a low-level test scenario. So we actually have to start, in order to seriously test the PCU, we first have to implement a lot of logic that's required in the layer 2 on the mobile station side for packet services. And that's why that particular part hasn't been implemented very. Let me just quickly try to increase the size here. Yeah. So looking at the individual test suites quickly, not in all the details, but just conceptually so it's clear. Let's look at the BTS tests. It's actually a rather complex example, but I start at the BTS, at the leftmost network element in all the diagrams. So what we actually have is here in a square box is our implementation under test, which in this case is Osmo BTS TRX. And on the right-hand side, we have our abstract test suite. That's the btstests.ttcn source code that gets executed. And we have all kinds of connections. So for the VTY, it's easy. We just attach there. We have also, and that's sort of a bit confusing and counter to the philosophy that I put out, we do have an Osmo BSC instance running there. Why do we have a BSC instance if we only want to test the BTS? Well, because there's an awful lot of state machines and transitions happening to the OML bring-up to really configure the BTS to get it to a point where it starts to broadcast on the radio channel. And implementing all of that in TTCN3 was too much of an effort initially. So we said, okay, we run an Osmo BSC instance there that only does the OML bring up, and then all the RSL, the actual messages that go over the radio interface, that RSL basically we connect directly to the BTS tests TTCN. And in order to emulate the radio side, we have basically bursts coming out of Osmo BTS TRX. Normally, they would go to Osmo TRX, but in our case, we have fake TRX, which is a Python program developed by Vadim, which then does some mangling. I don't go into the details. And has, again, bursts going to another program developed by Vadim called TRXCon, which then has a layer 1 control interface that we attach from BTS tests. So basically, the combination of TRXCon and fake TRX behaves like an OsmoCom BB layer 1 to the BTS test TTCN. And that way, we can have tests that go down to the lowest level of actually all the encoding and decoding and everything is done. It's just we don't modulate it onto an RF carrier and demodulate it again. That's the only difference from the real world. And now, actually, Pau has been setting this up with a real Osmocom BB phone using the same hardware setup as Osmo GSM tester. So we can actually run this test suite now with real BTS hardware against real phones and still only do all these low-level tests that we do there. For the BSC, it looks slightly simpler. So the implementation under test again is a rectangular box here, our Osmo BSC. And we have the test suite that attaches to the ABIS RSL, so it emulates the BTS, it attaches to control and VTY, and it also attaches to the A interface. So it emulates basically the BTS and the MSC and all kinds of other bits. Again, we have, in order to ignore the OML problem, which is out of scope for the tests so far, we have an Osmo BTS OML dummy, which is basically something that behaves like a BTS, but only on the OML protocol to make the BSC think it has correctly initialized the BTS and it actually can perform the runtime transactions after the boot up or the bring up of the device. For the MSC tests, it's also again similar. We have the implementation under test here, our Osmo MSC. It has a GSUP interface for the HLR interface. It has an MNCC interface for the calls. It has an SMPP interface for SMS. It has a control interface, it has a VTY interface, and the abstract test suite connects to all of them. And for the A interface emulation, we go through the Osmo STP, but it's basically just a router sending the messages left and right. And from in that test suite, we then test all kinds of transactions, like a location update from a mobile station, a periodic one, or we test incoming mobile originated SMS, mobile terminated SMS, paging procedures. We emulate actually not one BSC, but we emulate multiple BSCs to the MSC. So we also see the behavior in that presence, which normally if you put a desk setup or something like that, you don't have that. But here we can just virtually instantiate multiple of these emulated components, and we can test behavior like, let's say you have two or three different location area codes and now a paging comes, does the paging appear at the right BTSs that belong to the location area or not? These are the kind of things we are doing there. Okay, and that goes now on for all the different other implementations. I don't want to go through all of them individually. You can look at the slides later on if you're interested in that level of detail. And it's sort of obvious, but let me state it explicitly. All the tests are open source, of course. All the scripts to start the containers are open source. Everything is there. So anyone who wants to run these tests, it should be rather easy to do so. And we actually regularly see that when a new developer comes around. Like recently, we have a new team member at Sysmocom. You really only need to install Docker and need to execute that Jenkins.sh script, and then it will basically do everything from that point on. It will build your the Docker images, it will start the containers, it will execute the test suite, and it will give you the results in JUnit XML and all the log files and stuff like that. So that's completely available to anyone to run, and we would actually encourage to run other parties to also run the tests, so it's not only Sysmocom doing that. Yeah, also about the details, I think you can look at the Docker files if you want to go there. That's sort of the walkthrough of what happens in the Jenkins execution. I'm also going to, this is just for reference only, so rather than looking at all the individual details now, I want to give you a quick view of how the results are presented, and they're publicly presented, so all of the results of our testing are available to anyone at any time. We're not hiding any test results, as embarrassing as they may be at times. So the reporting works by the Titan test executor has a plugin that ships with the Titan test executor, which generates JUnit XML output. And the JUnit XML output then is parsed by Jenkins, which has support for JUnit XML. And it can present that. We will have a look in just a few minutes. Also, the artifacts will be stored. That means the PCAP file of every test case. So basically, before we start one test case, we open a new PCAP file. The name encodes the name of the test case. The same we do with the log files of the test suite and the log files of the implementation under test and the config files. And then when the test case is stopped, basically we stop the PCAP file and so on. So for each and every test case, you have these set of files that can be analyzed. And that's just a link there, how this looks like. And actually, let's do that now. Probably I've been kicked out of Wi-Fi by now. And we have a demo effect here. Yeah, okay. So I'm going to increase the font size in a second. So what I'm going to do is I'm actually selecting TTCN3 here. There's a separate tab. And it shows you all the different TTCN3 test suites that are executed. And now let's pick, for example, the TTCN3 BSC test, right? So the BSC test means the BSC is the implementation that we test. And you already see here this test result trend that shows you sort of what's the trend in results. So you see it's sort of some level of noise at the bottom, but it's not significantly changing. And you can click on the left here on Test Results Analyzer. And then you don't see anything. I'm not responsible for Jenkins. Actually, what you need to do is you see expand all, and then you see something. And then you need to scroll because the screen is not large enough. So yeah, so on the right-hand side, you see the different test build numbers, so 371, 372, and so on and so on. And here you see a tree of test cases where you see the name of the test case and how it has performed in all these recent builds. And you can see the BSC is doing rather well for a lot of tests. Here, this effect happens if a test case was newly added. So like 7 builds ago, this didn't exist yet, this test case, but it was added. So it wasn't available back then. But now in the new builds, it's there and it passes. And then we have an entire block of tests that fails here. That's known. I didn't have time to fix that. My fault. And here we have some tests that used to fail, but they were fixed, which is good. So we have an improvement in terms of the test pass. Then we have one that has always failed here again. And so you can see basically what's happened. So what we see here is that the results in this test suite are extremely deterministic. We don't have sort of random speckles that show up. So if it fails, it fails consistently. Or if it passes consistently. We just have some errors. And that is executed against the latest Git master every night. So once per night or early morning, German time actually, these are updated and you get another column in that. And if you now want to see the artifacts, you can basically look at a given test run. So if we look at TTCN3 BSC tests, we look at test run 337. And we can click on build artifacts, logs, whatever BSC tester. And then you see all the PCAP files and all the stuff that it has generated while executing the tests. And so if something fails, somebody can click there, look at the PCAP file, compare it with an old PCAP file, what went different, how can we resolve this? That's basically the way how this is done. Yeah, and there's a couple of links. And that already brings me to the end, almost on spot. So we have time for some questions. Yeah. Ah, the microphone is in the back, okay. Omar was the first one, I think. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for developing all this test infrastructure and increasing reliability. Regarding the integration tests, is there a reason why they're not push blocking and versus the unit tests, which we have on each repository? How long do these tests take to run? And
yeah, so basically, with push blocking, you refer to basically not being permitting the merge of a patch that is deteriorating the test result. We're not doing that at this point due to the duration, and that's what you hint of the test runs. We can actually look at some of these. You just need to find the right window again. There's too many of those. Where did I put it? I think I closed it. Anyway, so you can look at the Jenkins output to see what's the duration. But I would say easily for the BSC alone, maybe 10 minutes or so, and then for the other network elements. And of course, a lot of these things interdepend. So, and particularly if you do a change to a library and you would want to run all of these tests, you probably have an hour or more delay in analyzing that. So at least on our existing infrastructure, without optimizing these tests further, we find it too negatively affecting our development flow and our ability to proceed in development, to make that really blocking. So it could be done if we, I mean, there's lots of room left for optimization of the test suite. So far, it has never been a target to make them run particularly fast. And of course, we could add more build slaves to parallelize things and higher performance machines. But yeah, there's cost associated with that. I think we're already paying something like €300 per month in hosting just for all the CI and build servers and the stuff. So yeah, that's the explanation.
BSC test is 23 minutes.
Which one? Sorry?
Just the BSC test took 23 minutes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
BTS test 24.
Yeah. Yeah, that's.
Are there any test cases from Titan, TTCN3, or are they just providing the protocols?
There are no test cases released by the Titan project. Their project is about creating the compiler and the runtime for TTCN itself. And it's just that internally, for other departments inside Ericsson, they have created these encoders and decoders, which they then also were permitted to release as open source. But the test suites that these other departments were developing, they are not released. There are some more modern protocols, not 2G, but more recent protocols. And in other areas where ETSI actually released TTCN test suites. So you can find an IPv6 compliance test suite or a SIP test suite, which you can use to validate a SIP stack or other protocols. But for all the things that we engage with, there are no published test suites from any third party, so we have to write the test suites, which is not such a bad thing, actually. What's more annoying is all the infrastructure that we have to write. For example, this RLC MAC layer for the PCU in order to then write test cases. But the actual test cases, I think it's also for the developers themselves, it's rather nice to think the other way around, I've implemented this functionality, now how do I test all the different cases, all the different states, and so on. I think it actually makes you rethink about your code, and it's a good way ahead. And also, I mean, maybe I have to mention that the people who write the tests at Sysmocom, it is mostly, but in the Osmocom community, normally it's the people who also write the code. So it's not just a test department and there's a development department, but it's the same people and not somebody else.
Thanks.
In Isomatica now, we are enabled GPRS in some communities. And you spoke that for testing Osmo PCU, there's still no GPRS implementation in the MS side. Do you think Free Calypso code could help? Because there is GPRS in there.
Yes and no. There are. So I cannot say about Free Calypso specifically. So just for those of you who don't know Free Calypso, it's basically a project that used leaked source code from Texas Instruments for Calypso or other Texas Instruments baseband processors and ported and maintained and improved that code, even though it's not, it's still copyrighted code and it's not officially released, but nobody cares. And the TI department who developed that code was closed 10 years ago. So it's unlikely that there's ever going to be anyone ever caring about it. I've tried something similar with a GPRS leaked GPRS source code from another mobile station stack vendor who shall be unnamed. And I gave up after a couple of days because the problem is the code is so integrated with all the rest of the user equipment, it was extremely difficult to just take out the RLC Mac code or even RLC Mac plus LLC. It was so tied into RR handling and into paging procedures and into circuit switch and into generic core code architecture, because it was never meant to run isolated outside of all this runtime environment. So I think you also spend a lot of time separating that out, and then in the end you have something that like legally is sort of questionable. So
just to run in the lab, like for testing, not to distribute.
You could do it. As I said, I investigated that once, and I think it's you will probably invest as much time or close to as much time as if you write the things. Okay, one more question? Okay, no more questions. That's good. Thanks.